originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barajabort crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and also to those of you tuning into our website at www.horseracingradio.net. As you all know, a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial support for riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you are able to help, please visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So joining us this evening by request, our guest has had an interesting journey. Originally a soccer superstar, started down the path to becoming a veterinarian, but she ended up riding races instead. Now she's a jockey's agent here in Kentucky with 130 wins and over $2.2 million in earnings. It is great to finally have jockey Liz Morris joining us in studio. Liz, welcome to Jock Talk.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So great to finally get you here on the show, Liz. And I have to start off by telling kind of a funny story for me anyway. When I was an apprentice riding at Tampa, I get a phone call from Liz Morris telling me to come up to Chicago. And I didn't listen. I went out east instead. And then we bumped into each other at the PDJF event here in Lexington, and you go, are you Christina? And I said, are you Liz? And then we hit it off well, had dinner, and swapped a few stories. So I told you that night, I said, hey, I would love to get you on the show. You have such a cool story, Liz. Can't wait to hear it. So let's start off by telling our listeners how you got involved in the great sport, and you grew up. Tell us where you grew up.
Well, I grew up in San Antonio, Texas. And went to high school there all the way up to my junior year. And then my senior year, I went to high school in Hawaii. Hello.
Hawaii.
Yeah. And then I ended up going to college in Hawaii as well. For
really?
About two and a half years, I was in Hawaii. And then I came back to the States and came back to Texas. And that's when I got more involved in the horse racing. But being in, you mentioned the soccer thing. I was scouted out when I was a junior because I was like, where I went to school, we won state and everything. We had billboards with our football team, how many times we won state. Sports is huge in Texas. It's not like, it's more like college than it is high school. So, I mean, even like for like our summers, they're not legally supposed to tell us what we have to practice, but you have to practice. If not, you're not making the team.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And that's just kind of how it is. We had our own doctors. I mean, I had people inject my knees. I just know what it's like. Yeah. Cause I ran track and soccer at the same time. Did a lot of wear and tear on my knees. I had OTB and tendonitis. Mm. So, but I was starting all-star. So like I had to do both. So.
You know what the horses go through.
Exactly. I honestly do. And I had to sit in ice like the horses do. And I know what all that feels like. I really do. And it's awful. I shouldn't say that out loud, but at least I didn't like the experience of it. But when you're an athlete and you love what you do, it doesn't matter. You want to do it and you're willing to do whatever it costs to do it. And I did stuff like that when I rode too, because of that.
I was just going to say, you knew how that was as an athlete, which then transferred over to riding, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, I got some crazy stories about that, but yeah. But, I went to, my senior year in high school, was Hawaii, which was awesome. I went to Radford High School, and I was in drama and stuff, and that's where Bette Midler was. She went to high school there too, so I thought that was kind of cool. She was like in the same drama studio that I was in when I would go to school. I thought that was kind of neat.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then it was just a great experience. I loved it. And then I went to college there. I played soccer for the University of Hawaii. That was a cool experience. I had several different offers for scholarships when I was being scouted out when I was a junior, but Hawaii just seemed like it worked out for me because I was with my high school sweetheart and he was older than me by a couple years, and he got stationed to Hawaii from boot camp. And well, it's the only way I could have stayed with him, and I kind of did something stupid. Well, not really stupid. I don't regret it. I just did something that I wasn't really mentally prepared for. I got married when I was 16.
Wow,
yeah,
16 I did. Years
That's
old.
Crazy. I know. And I had permission from my mom because she knew him. He was like, we were dating my whole high school, like for like 3 or 4 years. And he was so responsible. He is such a great guy. And my mom knew I was so focused that there was nothing going to disturb me from my education, that I wasn't like that. I felt like I needed to do it. And I was going to do it whether she let me to or not. And she knew that. So she's like, well, I might as well support her. She is my best friend. And, you know, I had a good relationship with my mom. She's like, so I'll support her. If not, she'll go to Mexico and marry, and then I won't see her anymore. So I'm not going to do that because I'm stubborn like that. And especially at that age. And so, yeah, she supported that. So that's why I chose Hawaii versus like other colleges that I was offered.
Because so, you're married.
Because I wanted to get married. And I was like, oh, well, Hawaii wants me. But they weren't a very good school to play soccer. And I did. I played for them and I was frustrated. And I decided I just don't really want to play anymore, and I don't care. I'll go to a local college. I'm an Air Force wife now, so I'm supported in college with, you know, because I'm married to someone that was in the Air Force. So I quit the team because it wasn't fun anymore, and because their level was not up to my expectations. And so then I ended up practicing with the United States Air Force team, and just for fun. And they actually said, Lizzie, why don't you try out for the team? I was the first girl to ever play for the United States Air Force team that I'm aware of at that time. So I played with Marines and Army and all this, like, in Hawaii.
That's impressive.
It was interesting, dude. Like, I swear, I don't know how I survived. I had, like, 3 concussions.
You ever started riding, you already had concussions.
And, like, they were either really nice to me, which was kind of, ugh, you know, or they wanted to put me in my place because I was the only girl on the team. And I played defense because I couldn't play offense because they were so fast. Mm-hmm. So I had to play defense instead. And I was a really good defender. But yeah, it was fun. And then my husband said, after the 3rd concussion, he was like, no, I don't want you playing anymore. You got to quit. You're going to hurt your... No. And so I stopped. Yeah.
Was that... Did you kind of resent that? Not
really.
When he told you to stop, or you were okay with it?
Sometimes I need that in my life. And at that time I needed that because I'm the kind of person that would have kept going, and that was not for the best interest of me. And he was more logical, rational than I was at the time. So I kind of needed him to step in and say that for my best interest. So I'm glad he did.
So I can only assume that playing for an all boys soccer team had to also prepare you for riding with a bunch of jocks that are 99% male.
Yes, I think my whole life prepared me for that. When I was growing up, my brother, I had an older brother, 8 years older than me, and he'd pick on me like I was his little brother. And like for a period of our life, we grew up kind of like in the country. So like we'd grow up with like BB guns and like, you know, fishing, and, you know, he'd just constantly pick on me, and I constantly wanted to hang out with him because he was my cool big brother, and he constantly like picked on me and like, you know, how big brothers do. So I think that prepared me. And then also the fact that like when I was in high school at Judson High School in San Antonio, Texas, they're tough. I mean, our coaches, there's no pain, no gain. And that's how they treat the sports there, at least at my school. We had a big 5A school that would win all the time. And like, it kind of mentally prepared me for all that. So like when I came to the racetrack, I was like, I'm scared of nothing. Like, you ain't gonna make me cry, because like there's no crying in any sports I've ever played. And I played sports since I was 5. So if you want to be good, you got to just do it, you know? So that's kind of what I think my whole life prepared me for it, really.
So let me ask you this question now. Did you ride horses at all when you were a kid?
No, that's crazy. Like for a very short period of my life, I did. My dad had a Shetland pony. And I got to ride the Shetland pony, and that thing was so honoring me.
Oh, they are.
Oh my God. He would try to run me underneath the fence all the time in the arena, and he would get me off, and I'd get back on, and he'd buck me, do all kinds of stuff. But like, I loved it. Like I just loved working with animals. Like my whole life, I always wanted to play outside and be around animals. Like when I played like with my friends and they're all boyfriend, they're all guys when I grew up. And I always wanted like, if we'd like play cowboys and Indians, I'm like, I'm the Indian, you know, you can be the cowboy. I'm the Indian. You know, I always wanted to be like really connected to nature and animals. And I always knew I was going to do something. Like when I was really little, I actually wanted to be a killer whale trainer. Really? My cousin was the head killer whale trainer at Shamu, SeaWorld of Texas. And I was the first kid to ever sit on Shamu's back ever before they started taking photos. I was like, I'm going to jump in the water and I'm going to be a killer whale trainer. That orca is going to shoot me out of his mouth. And that's what I'm going to do for a living, you know? So, and then I got discouraged from that. And then it ended up being, when I moved to Hawaii, I started working with horses up there a little bit. I would hang out with the locals and we would, they'd have like the military that were there. Cause like in Hawaii, you have Air Force, you have all branches basically. And some of them were cowboys and they'd come out and hang out to the local homestead land and they would pay to bring the bulls down from the mountain and buck them out. Well, how we got the bulls down from the mountain is we'd go up on the horses and we'd corral them down to the bucking chute and stuff. So I got in with the locals cause I surfed and stuff and like they're all my friends. So I got to learn, just get on horses and start doing that. And then I fell in love with horses. So it kind of reunited me and connected me with horses. And I'm like, I think I'm going to go to school to be a horse vet. That's what I want to do. I can work with animals. I love horses. I love large animals, something that's a challenge. Because the opportunity to work in like with killer whales and stuff is very, very limited. It's extremely challenging. It's hard to get a job doing that. Although I almost got a job doing that before I got back into horse racing.
What?
They wanted me to be a dolphin trainer.
And you turned them down.
Yeah. It's crazy.
You went to the racetrack instead.
I went, came back to the racetrack. Yeah.
But hey, yeah. It worked out well, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. You know, that's, so I'm assuming you were a very talented swimmer as you would have
I'm
to
a
be to.
Very good swimmer.
And yeah. You said surfing.
Yeah, I love to surf. I love the ocean. I love anything in nature. Like I just got back from Utah. I went hiking. I did, I went to actually hike the Grand Canyon. I did that first. And then after that, I went to Utah. I drove to Utah after Arizona, and then I hiked Mount Zion, and then hiked Capitol Reef. And I mean, you're 9,000 feet above sea level, so it's not like your average hike. It's like you're really trying to grasp for air, and it's very challenging. And there's where I hike, there's no like trail paths. It's like you have to figure it out. They like, I forget what these rocks are called, but they put these little rocks up, and that way you know that's kind of an idea where you should go next.
Kind
of,
sort
of. So you don't fall off a cliff. Yeah. Yeah.
And you just did this.
I just did that. Yeah, I did that. I just got back last week. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was
so you're
fun.
Still so athletic, even though you don't ride or play soccer anymore, but you're still a very athletic person.
Yeah, I wish I had more time to be more athletic, really. But with the horse racing where I live here, commuting back and forth to Louisville or back and forth to when I was at Ellis for the draws and stuff, God, it takes up so much time.
And we'll get to what you're doing now.
Yeah.
A little bit later on in the show. But so you're living in Hawaii. You've had some experience with horses, Shetland ponies anyway, and then the local horses in Hawaii. And then while you're going to school at this time, are you thinking you're going to become an equine vet?
Yeah, I'm basically getting my basics down and then like anything that's going to help me into for my 4-year, because you need to have your 4-year degree before you can get into vet school. And if you go in, well, this is what I was always told from the people that like advised me. If you go into vet school or you apply for vet school, if you already have your biology degree or 4-year degree, you're showing commitment and you're more apt to get accepted, especially if you're a female, because they say females like tend to like want to start families and then they like to get discouraged from pursuing their career. That's what I was told by a couple of vets I work for.
So you're on this path.
Yes.
And you played soccer and then you decided not to stay with soccer. You just went with the Air Force scholarship or whatever, I guess you want to call it. So how did you find the racetrack?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of funny. It found me. But no, I moved back to Texas. My husband at the time, we got a divorce and then it just because we were too young to be married and it just we didn't know how to communicate. But so then that's fine. And then I moved back to Texas and it's sad because then he got killed in a car accident about 3 months later. By a drunk driver in the middle of the day. Yeah, it was really sad. He was way too young. Like, he's an awesome human being. And then, so, like, I moved back to Texas to be with my family for a little bit and to kind of like readjust and refocus on what I wanted to do. And I ended up applying for school there in Texas and going to school there. And then I knew I wanted to be a horse vet. So then I was like, well, it made sense to try to get myself involved in a job that would be oriented to what I was going to school for. It looked good, you know, on my resume and stuff like that as far as getting into vet school. So I went on the backside of Retama Park. I found out there was a racetrack at Retama Park. I've never even watched races before in my whole life.
Never.
Never. I didn't even know much about the racetrack, period. I wasn't growing up around. I didn't know
anything. Did you know what a jockey was?
Well, not really. Kind of, yeah. I did, but not like some people say, I knew I wanted to be a jockey growing up. I watched it all my life. No, I didn't know that. I didn't know it was available. I thought it was like maybe like somewhere in the United States and it was for rich people.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I thought. Yeah. And so I went to found Retama Park. I went back there and I just walked around. I met some people and I started talking to them. I got offered a job like cleaning stalls, basically. Not even really grooming, just cleaning stalls. So I started like cleaning stalls and I told them what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a vet and I'd like to get involved with just, you know, as much possible. And so his vet ended up hiring me because he needed an assistant. So then I went from like doing that to developing x-rays and like, you know, giving jugs and stuff like that, you know, disinfecting, you know, for injections and stuff. And so I would develop my x-rays over at Retama Equine Hospital, which is, I don't know if it is still today, but at the time it was the third best equine hospital in Texas. So I'd go over there, develop the x-rays, and I'd always talk to one of the vet assistants there and the vets there. And they were like, hey, Liz, you know, eventually they like, got to like me and they're like, you know, I know you want to be a vet and we got a position open. You should apply to be a vet assistant here. I think you'd fit in. I'm like, yeah, no brainer. And they both graduated from Texas A&M, which is where I wanted to go to vet school. So I was like, yeah, this would be awesome, right? So I went in for the interview. I got the job and I worked there for a little bit. And I did a lot of things. I did colic surgeries, orthopedic surgeries, you name it. I got to biopsy, necropsy, Clydesdales, just really some really cool stuff. And then I got introduced to the racetrack that way by watching the people galloping and watching. And then I went to a race and I saw the jockeys and I'm like, man, I really want to do that. I mean, I've been an athlete since I was 5. I love animals. I feel like I get along with animals really well. And I love animal behavior. And that's what intrigued me in wanting to be a vet is because of the animal behavior part of it. So I was like, you know what? Like, I think I'm going to do this. I'm going to see how I can do this. So I eventually ran into some people and they started letting me gallop their pony in the field at Retama Park polo fields. Yeah. Cause I've never rode before. I never like, not like that. So right. I started galloping this ex racehorse that was like a pony. He brought him up and I'd gallop him in the field. It was crazy. No one knew.
Did you have anyone there like coaching you?
Yeah. A gallop boy.
Wow.
But when you want to get involved in something, you'll do anything
to learn.
Yeah. So then like people are like, well, you probably need to go to the farm. So like I found a farm and then I was driving all the way out there for free, not getting paid.
How far was it?
It was like towards New Braunfels. So it had to be like 30 minutes from where I lived. So I started going out there and I started just getting on horses and started learning to gallop at the farm. And I started with quarter horses.
Oh.
So my first horse I ever broke out of the gate set a track record at Retama Park. And that was my first horse to break out of the gate at the farm. And they laughed. They're like, I know I'm not supposed to cuss, so I'm not going to. But they're like, I don't remember. It was the Bustamantes. And I don't know if you know Rudy Bustamante. He actually won the All-American, I think, at like 16. So this was a guy kind of coaching me along. You know, he's like, you got to watch the pin. You got to break before the pin. And I'm like, okay. And I'm hanging on. They are all betting. I had all these people around betting to see if I was going to fall off or not. And I stayed on. So I was so proud. I was like, I ain't falling off this horse, even if it's dragging me, you know. But yeah, so like when you work with quarter horses, though, and you start working with thoroughbreds, it makes it so easy because quarter horses are so fast. So when I worked for Steve and they would be like, oh, this horse is goofy in the gate, da 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 da. And I'm like, no.
Not compared to the
quarter horses. You ain't got nothing on that. You know what I mean? So I was like, I was never scared ever. And then I started riding match races, which I don't know how I didn't die because I wasn't prepared to. I rode 3 match races, won all 3 of them. All I knew was to plug it in and hit the other one with a stick. Plug it in, hit with a stick. And then I couldn't even pull them up. Like afterwards, like going over the hills and stuff because on these back farms. And I was
so where did these match races take place?
In New Braunfels.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's the Texas way, man. It's kind of like New Orleans. It's kind of like Louisiana, you know? It's just like, I was light and not scared, and I wanted to be a jockey. So I was like, yeah, I'll do it.
So they threw you up there.
Yeah. I was like, I'll do it. I'll figure it out.
Thoroughbreds or quarter horse?
Quarter horses. I mean, you could feel their heart pumping in the gate because of how much stuff they gave them. I'm like, oh my God, here we go. Yay. So I'm kind of like an adrenaline rush junkie too, oh, obviously. For sure.
We all are.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have to tell you really quickly, when I was just getting ready to ride races, I wasn't great coming out of the gate. So someone took me to their farm and they said, here, this is going to teach you how to break out of the gate. They threw me up on a couple quarter horses.
Yeah.
I learned real quick. Because, and that is, speaking of adrenaline rush,
yeah,
that is the biggest adrenaline rush ever experienced. Breaking out of the gate on a quarter horse is just ridiculous. So yeah, that had to be a very cool experience.
Yeah, I loved it. You know, I always said I wanted to do it. I never got the chance to do it. I wanted to ride an 870 race because quarter horses are so fast. And then to go further than what they go, that would give you the strategy and the logic to the race as well.
On top of
yeah,
the speed.
On top of the speed. I always wanted to do that. I never got a chance to do it because I moved away from Texas because Frankie Lovato became kind of a mentor. And how I hooked up with Frankie is because I wanted an equisizer because I was practicing on bales of hay, you know, like old school, man.
Not Chase's bales of hay. Yeah, yeah. It sounds like back in the day.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. And so Frankie kind of took me under his wing. He's like, honey, you're going to kill yourself. Let me see if I can get you a job over here and I'll mentor you, you know, because obviously you have the skill set and the mindset good of what you needed to be a good jockey. So thank God for Frankie. He's like a family member to me now. So he took me in and then he got me a job working for Asmussen.
Okay. And this was where?
That was in Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah. I first moved to Hawthorne Racetrack. Yeah.
That's where I first went up north.
Yeah. And talk about a narrow track to learn to get on horses on.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never been there.
Yeah. It's like very busy, narrow, like kind of like Louisiana, kind of like fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. And then after Hawthorne, I went to fairgrounds with Steve.
And then you went down there.
Yeah.
So I guess you were prepared for it anyway.
Yeah.
But so Frankie Lovato obviously knows what he's doing and he put you under his wing. And so would he himself like put you on the equisizer and show you what to do and what exactly did he teach you?
Every day. I was like consumed by it. I practiced every day. Well, he just taught me how to like put my feet in the irons and how to gather my reins and how to like, you know, how do you express this in words, but how to move your reins through your hands to tighten them up,
gathering up
your reins. Yeah. How to stick and hit at the same time, get that motion going, you know, with a nice hand ride and stay collected together. And he would actually video the races for me, and then I would break out of the gate with the jockey, and then like kind of like a stimulated race, I'd pick a rider out and I'd ride the way that rider was riding in that race. So I did a lot of that. I was really, after working for Asmussen and then coming back to Chicago, I was working for Ronnie Warner. And then Ronnie wanted me to go to New York, and I didn't. I stayed in Chicago because I want to race here. This is where I want to ride. Then I started working for Moses Yanez, and I'd breeze 8 horses in one day, sometimes a mile. And I was fitter than any rider. Like, they were like, Liz, when are you going to start riding? I'm like, you've done it all. Like, you've come out of the gates with all of us. Like, you're more than ready to start riding. When people started asking me that, then I knew I was ready. Because I was always told, don't start riding until you're ready because you're a girl and they're really going to judge you. And if you look bad, they're never going to put you on a horse again, you know? And so like, I really like, so many of those trainers watched me breeze so many horses, and my boss Moses would be like, put me in the gate with like all the other riders, all the other jockeys in Chicago at the time. And like a set of 6 of us would come out of the gate and he'd be like, Liz, he put me on the worst one. And he goes, and if you can't beat a horse in this match race that we're setting up, then you have to buy the barn tacos. And I bought a lot of tacos.
You bought a lot of tacos.
Cause he always put me on the first one, man. It was not fair. But I learned how to breeze all kinds of horses. And then when I worked for like Carl Nasker and people like that, like their babies were like easy. You could gallop them all short, you know. It was just, I had an array of like different horses I'd been on. So when I rode races, like to me, it was easy.
Well, and you mentioned some very big names, some great people you learned from. Frankie Lovato, Steve Asmussen, Ronnie Warner, Carl Nasker. What are some of the biggest pieces of advice you took away from those people?
Oh God, they all offer so much, something so different. Like Steve Asmussen doesn't give advice, first and foremost. You have to figure it out on your own.
Really?
He gives you the opportunity And what you do with that is what you're going to get out of it. And I love that about him, though, because it's a challenge and I like a challenge. And, like, man, he taught me so much just to be a great horse person in general. Like, he's amazing. He's one of the best I've ever worked around, and I'm grateful that he gave me a job. I would go to the barn early in the morning. I'd leave at 7 o'clock at night. I mean, I was basically doing everything because he knew I wanted to be a jockey. And so I was still, like, you know, I was galloping horses, what I was prepared to gallop at that time in my career. And then I would do Gastrogard. I would write payroll. I would do everything. Whatever needed to be done, I did. I ran horses. I did it all, really. But he taught me a lot because of that. And then he taught me to have good hands. I have to give all that credit to Steve. I mean, I think I naturally had it in me to have good hands on a horse anyways, but he taught me really to develop the hands, because when Steve tells you to do something with a horse, he wants you to do that with a horse. So when he says, you know, jog off, he means jog. He doesn't mean hobby horse off. He means you're going to jog, and he teaches you how to have good hands. And he kind of taught me how to do that. If not, you're going to get yelled at. And he does it in front of everybody, and he's not shy about it. And it's like, no one wants to get yelled at. So you eventually either learn or you quit, you know? And I was like, I'm not a quitter. So,
well, and plus it had to be an advantage that he rode. So he knew exactly how to describe that to you, how to do that, how to accomplish it.
But he describes it in a way that's above what most people can intellectually develop, like, you know, interpret. That's what I love about him too, because he'll speak above you. And if you really want it, you're going to figure it out. If not, you never do. And then he sees what kind of person you are too, which I think is amazing about him. He's so smart. Like, seriously, he's one of the smartest people in the horse industry that I met, and I really respect him.
Jockey Liz Morris is joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Liz, we got to take a break.
Cool.
But hang tight.
I'm hanging on.
We'll be back. Again, folks, you're listening to Jock Talk.
Do we get to drink vodka?
Well, you know what? I think that's a really good idea. So, yeah. I think that would make the second half even better.
That's my favorite vodka. It's Tito's. It's gluten-free.
Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I love it. Folks, we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judges' choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Drayden Van Dyke made the most out of limited mounts as he won the Grade 1 Cotillion Stakes aboard It Tis Well. Van Dyke finished the week third in North America in earnings from two wins and four mounts. Luis Saez has won three stakes highlighted by wins in the Grade 2 Gallant Bloom with Highway Star and the Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks with Tecalita. Saez led North American jockeys in earnings and finished the week with six wins, 5 seconds, and 9 third-place finishes from 38 mounts. Finally, the Animal Element Jockey of the Week, Ricardo Santana Jr., had a great week as he won four stakes races at Remington Park on Sunday. Santana's stakes wins began early in the card as he won the Flashy Lady with Golden Mischief and the Remington Green Stakes with Turbo Street. Santana returned to the winner's circle in the Governor's Cup Stakes with Iron Fist over a short field that included co-favorite American Dubai and second choice Texas Chrome. Santana's final stakes win of the day came aboard the Steve Asmussen train Untrapped in the featured event, the Grade 3 Oklahoma Derby. The pair sat just off the pace before circling three wide and making a strong stretch drive to pull away from the post-time favorite, Battle of Midway. Santana finished the week with 6 wins, 3 seconds, and 5 third-place finishes from 23 starts. John Parada's newest book, Half a Chance, is available now at jockeytalk360.com and for Kindle at amazon.com. Half a Chance is a story of a down-on-his-luck jockey agent who finds himself entangled in a web of deceit and larceny and provides the kind of entertaining read that is ideal for any racing fan. Visit jockeytalk360.com for more information. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit jockeytalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at jockeytalk.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Liz Morris. And Liz, during the first half of the show, we heard your very unusual and long journey to riding races and how you were a superstar soccer player, you're on your way to becoming a vet, and then you found the racetrack. And tell me, how did you know, when was the day that you figured out that you were ready to start riding races, that you were ready to go take out your license and start that journey?
I would say when I was breezing so many horses every single day, like 8 horses a day, and I had trainers like saying, oh, Lizzie, you look like a lizard on a log, you know, and just like Frank Kirby was the one I think that polished it off for me, because Frank's a hard knocker, old school trainer. And he rode girls in the past if they were good, like Zoe Cadman. And those are the shoes I had to try to like fulfill, because Zoe was riding at the time, and Zoe's a great rider. She is a great rider, and she was a great rider. Those are some big shoes. She really was inspiration to me. And so when I got so fit that I wasn't getting tired at all, and I had Frank Kirby say to me, Liz, are you ever going to start riding? That's when I knew I was ready. I was like, okay, I'm ready to start riding. Now I just got to find someone to ride me. that's the hard part. So I had Kenny Spraggins had a really good looking 2-year-old colt. And I thought I was already beyond gate approved. So asking the guys for my license, like Eddie Cibio Razzo, to break out the gate with me, he was like, Liz, I don't even have to do it. You've already done it. Like, I don't know how many times, like, come on. So they just went ahead and gave me my license for the, you know, breaking out of the gate. And I convinced Kenny Spraggins to ride me on this horse, because I used to do mane work for him. I used to pull manes on the side after galloping and braid manes and stuff. Like, so that was one of the people that I did that for. And so he's like, I'm gonna put you on this 2-year-old. I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, his first time starter, but I think he's got a really good shot. So I rode this horse, and they gave me a stick, which I thought was kind of cool, because I didn't think they would. First time starter, I was in the 8-hole out of a 12-horse field, big good looking colt. And he ran third. I didn't win, but he ran third. I jumped off and my legs weren't tired, nothing. You know, you hear the stories that people's legs are tired. Mm-hmm. No, I was more nervous of the interview that Joe Kristofek and them interviewed me in the paddock at Arlington than I was about riding the race, man. I was like, I don't want to be interviewed before I ride. Just let me ride. But I know that's what you have to do, you know? So yeah, I remember the video of it. I was sitting in this chair, right? Because they had those chairs, and I kept hitting my stick with my foot, and it kept bouncing up and kept bouncing up. And it looked so funny, but I didn't even realize that I was doing it because I was so nervous.
It was a nervous tick, like, yeah.
When I jumped off, though, I was like, I want to do it again. I wish I could ride another one.
Not tired at all.
Not tired at all.
How far was the race?
It was 5.5.
5.5.
And most people like to kind of put bugs on a route race because they think that you have more leg for that. You have time to relax and kind of settle and then run. No, mine was 5.5.
On a first-timer, which is kind of, you know, a tough ask for your very first race ever, along with the horse's very first race ever. That's, the combination. But to run third, first out for both of you was obviously
impressive. It was very cool.
Did you have an agent lined up at this point?
I had Jody Sinclair lined up at that time. He was going to take my book, and then he ended up taking me. But I wanted to start riding at the very end of Arlington to see where I was at, even though I knew I wasn't going to ride a lot. I just wanted to see where I was at, so to prepare myself for the Hawthorne meet, because I knew I would do well at Hawthorne.
And that's where you guys went after Arlington.
Yeah, because I mean, I rode with people like, when I was riding races, geez, I rode with Renee Douglas, I rode with Pat Day, I rode with Mark Guidry, I rode when Marlon was at his prime. Like, I rode with some real Eddie, that was also when Eddie Martin was at his prime, C.H. Marquez was at his prime. I rode with those guys. I rode with Razzo, you know, like in Early Fires and, yeah, I rode with these like really good riders. I was so lucky.
What was it like riding with such talented riders all around you? That had to be a really good learning experience.
It was awesome. They taught me so much. Yeah.
Like what did they teach you?
When I was messing up, for sure.
Pointed out.
Yeah, they've definitely pointed it out, you know, and you know, and they would tell me when I was doing good and too, you know, they're like, Lizzie, you look good on that horse, or Lizzie, you rode a smart race. You know, my thing is they didn't ride girls in Chicago.
That's what I've heard.
They don't. It's kind of like the California thing when they didn't ride girls. So when I kept telling everyone I wanted to stay and ride in Chicago, they're like, why? You should go to the East Coast. It's the only place you're going to have opportunity. And I'm like, no, all these guys know me. They've watched me develop. Like why? And I love Chicago. It feels like home. So I'm not going anywhere. This is where I'm going to ride. This is where I want to ride. And I don't care. And that's when Zoe had the bug. Well, no, I watched Zoe when she had the bug, and then she was a journeyman at that point when she was in Chicago, kind of getting ready to retire, really. And Zoe really helped me a lot. She really did. But I had to outsmart them. I did a lot of homework. I did more homework than I know of any probably rider that... Anybody that gets their, well, Jim Miller is my best friend, and at the time he was a GM at Hawthorne. I'd get Jim Miller to pull up in the library and get me the discs of the past races of my horses. I'd watch them the night before. I'd pull up, this is how I got into pedigree, I'd pull up the sire and the dam size sire, and I would literally study like
pedigrees.
Loved it. And it, because I saw patterns when I started to ride. I saw patterns of pedigrees, especially like certain lines that like to carry their head a certain way, their light mouth, weak in the back end. And I started even learning that a lot of them like their temperaments and who would like to take the dirt and who wouldn't like to take the dirt. You know, I applied all that into my racing. And because I wasn't given favorites right off the bat. Zoe was very lucky. She had Stidham backing her up. I didn't have anybody like that backing me up. I had Liz selling Liz. And I'd go in there and I'd say, hey, can I ride your Stormcat filly? I know the boys ain't getting along with her. She's real nervous. I know she wants to flip and stuff like that. I love to ride her. They're like, really? And they're like, yeah, you can work her. I work her. She'd go to the pole easy for me more than anyone else. So I would literally go and hustle my own mounts. Even though I had an agent, I didn't rely on my agent. And so I would do my homework. So I would take these 20-1 shots and they'd hit the board. And then they're like, wow, how'd you do that? And then like I'd win. And then they were like, well, if you can do that with this one, maybe I'll give you something a little bit better. So that's how I got going.
That's how you built up your
business.
That's
how I got built. Mm-hmm.
By doing all of this homework. Like you said, yeah. I've never heard anyone studying pedigrees before going out to ride a race.
You know who I think might have, though, or maybe didn't study them, but just paid attention to them, was like Mark Guidry. Because Mark Guidry and me would come back and we'd watch the replay and he'd be like, yeah, I bet that horse by Stormcat, Lizzie, I bet it can't breathe. I'm like, yeah, I had a little bit of a breathing issue. You're right, Mark. You know, so Mark paid attention to that. Renee Douglas is the one who really taught me how to study my form. I studied my form. I'd set up, I would like, you know how they do with the Derby, they anticipate how a race is going to unfold. I would do my homework, anticipate how the race was going to unfold. And if it came out of the gate, it'd be a different story. I would beat those boys so many times at the wire because they didn't know, they weren't the real speed. And I'd let them go because I knew I had horse.
You would study the pace.
I would study the pace. I knew how the races were going to step. I knew who to follow, who not to follow. And that helped me be a better turf rider because I knew who not to get behind and who to follow. Like, it's important to study your riders as much as to study your form. And I would do both. Because I had to do something to get an advantage.
To get that edge on the boys.
Exactly.
Because they didn't like to ride girls in Chicago. So you had to prove to them that you were even more capable than those guys.
Absolutely. Yep.
Did you, now just looking at you, Liz, you're pretty tall. Did you have a tough time with your weight?
I did. And that was another thing. So I had like, I was one of those racehorses. Like, if I was a racehorse, I'd be pure heart. Because I am tall, I'm 5'5" and a half, and I'm very muscular from playing sports, and muscle weighs more than fat. Mm-hmm. So I never flipped. I never did that cause I was too scared to lose my teeth. And even if I like could flip, I don't think I could do it. Cause I'm not capable of doing that really that I know of.
That's good.
Yeah. Thank God, but I would reduce a lot, especially when I had the bug. Oh my gosh. I remember sometimes reducing 8 to 10 pounds before I rode, and I ended up being leading apprentice by pure heart.
So you were leading.
Yeah, I was leading apprentice. Yeah. And I mean, I would reduce so hard. Like,
what would you do exactly? Just sit in the hot box all
I'd morning, wear plastics or? In the morning underneath my clothes, especially if it was cold outside. And then when I'd work horses, I naturally sweat some. And then I would get into the room and I would start the jacuzzi tub and I'd get it, you know, sitting there for about an hour and play Tetris. When I had a Game Boy, it helped to go by. And then I'd wait for the hot box to warm up. And then I would get in there and then study some more of my program. And
good time to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Distract yourself. but yeah, I did that a lot. I was very selective of what I ate. I didn't eat, like, you know, a lot of stuff that I knew that was going to sit on me, was going to be hard to digest and that sort of thing. A lot of
did
soup.
Did you work out at all in addition to getting on horses in the morning, or you just pretty much would work horses in the morning?
I did water aerobics.
Mm.
I know that sounds funny, but it's easy on your joints and it kept you really fit. It was resistant training, so it didn't put muscle mass on me. And that's something that I gain really easy is muscle. So I did water aerobics. I was like the youngest
person. With
the
old ladies out there?
Yeah. It was good though. They rocked it, man. It was great.
Whatever works.
Yeah. I did water aerobics. And I had swim laps too because I love to swim. So yeah.
Good. Sounds like it all worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Liz, you were leading apprentice
mm-hmm.
in Chicago. And then did you stay in Chicago for your entire career?
No, I would love to have, but, you know, I had to be realistic. So when Arlington was coming back, like when I lost my bug, I still did really good at Hawthorne. I was in the top 10. I actually won 3 races in like 1 day after losing my bug, which I thought that was pretty cool. And that got me all excited. But then after Hawthorne, I knew I was going into Arlington. I'm like, man, like this is tough. Me is when Arlington was like a great spot to be and all the good riders were there, man. I was like, I don't want to starve. So I asked Frank Kirby because Frank Kirby rode me a lot when I had the bug. And I said, what do I do? And he goes, well, listen, honey. He goes, I'm going to send some horses to Indiana with an owner that's got Indiana breds, John Haydack. He's like, I think you should go over there. He's going to send them to Tracy Wisner. I think you should go ride in Indiana and ride all these owners' horses. They'll win. They're really nice horses for Indiana breds. I'm like, okay. So that's what I ended up doing. Never been to Indiana in my life. What an eye opener. Oh my God. Completely different than Chicago. So that's what I did. And I ended up, I know I finished in the top 10. I think I was like 7th or 8th in the standings. I won a stake and I did well. They were welcoming to girls. It was just a different kind of racing I wasn't quite used to. Yeah.
You told me a funny story before we got on air. So you're telling me about this horse that was trained by a tractor?
Yeah, it was trained by a tractor. It's crazy. Yeah, her name was Bunny. And Harry Kaler was a trainer. And he'd come into the paddock in his overalls and he'd be like, Lizzie, Bunny's doing real good. You should have seen her train the other day. He's like, you know, I trained her with my tractor. And he's like, and it was real muddy out and it was really deep. So she's really fit. And you know, it was so funny. I just couldn't believe it. And I've never had someone tell me that before. Like, I was like, this is so different from where I came from. And sure enough, she won. Yeah, she won. And I was like her pilot for the rest of her career. Me and Bunny. She wasn't a favorite either. But I gave her a chance, you know? I mean, I gave her a chance and she responded, so.
I'm trying to picture this horse getting trained by the tractor.
I know, right?
It's hard to imagine.
Yeah.
Really
he would
is.
Sit and drive the tractor and hold on to the horse. And then there was another trainer that trains his horses out of a truck window. Yeah, no. And he would win a lot of races. I don't know how you'd do it. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I didn't ride for that guy, but I heard about him.
Just when I thought I'd heard everything. Now I hear these stories. Gosh, that's crazy.
And then a lot of them train off of the exerciser. Mm. Like a lot of them did that
right.
there, you
right.
know,
right
on the farms. But yeah, a tractor and a truck. Yep.
So you were talking about how Bunny wasn't a favorite. And did you find that when you would go out and you would get on a horse, no matter, did you look at the tow board or would you just put horses pick up on confidence,
yeah.
as you know. So would you try to?
I never looked at the tow board. It didn't matter to me.
You try on everything.
Yeah. Honestly, I did. I would tell other jockeys in the room, like Julio Felix, before I took his book. I was like, you're going to win this race today. And he's like, Lizzie, looking at the form, no shot. And I'm like, you're going to win this race today. And he won. And he goes, how the hell you know that? I'm like, because I handicapped it. I know, you know, the whole race set up for you. Even though you weren't a favorite, I knew you're going to win. Because my brain was so programmed to do that, you know. But no, I never looked at the odds. I always just like felt the horse. It's a feel thing. So, and I, a lot of times I just let horses do what they wanted to do. Let them tell me what they wanted to do instead of us telling them. I think that's the biggest problem sometimes. When I rode, I noticed that more horses just wanted to let them have their way. They didn't like the dirt, then get them out of the dirt. Wow, kick back on again. That's so simple. Why doesn't not everybody pay attention to that? The stick. I would take so many horses that were getting beat up with a stick and just not even hit them, and then they would run and win. I'm like, how did you not know that? Like, you could feel it when you're riding them, you know? That's, I just...
Stuff you just picked up on.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, you had that you would use that as an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, as a girl, it is obviously tougher, so you have to use whatever you can. And Liz, how would you describe your riding style? Would you say you're more of a front-end runner, or you would obviously...
I always had a horse at the end. Yeah. I wasn't a front-end runner, really. I wasn't one to send and stop. Like, if I was on the front end, I was going to maintain the front end. Yeah, I had a good sense of pace, and if I was on the front end, I'd maintain it and win, you know? And, you know, people like E.T. Baird's dad taught me tricks about that. If you ever stay at Lincoln front, you know, then it's hard for them to catch you. So I like learn from all the old timers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you, would you say you're more of a, would you left hand, right hand, more of a stick rider? Just
I wasn't more, I was not much of a stick. I mean, I didn't abuse a horse. Like, I didn't have to. I always had horse. I always listened to what the horse told me to do. So it was more like a Pat Day kind of like style,
with
like where with my hands. It was all in my hands. And you know who also helped me learn that? It was my one agent, Randy Romero Jr. He had my book for a little bit when I had the bug when he came to Chicago. And he taught me that. He's like, you always know how much horse you have through your hands. And he's right. And I would listen to that. So I always had something. I always had something left to finish with. Sometimes I'd give my trainers a heart attack when they'd watch me ride because they're like, what is she doing so far back there? I let the horse gather himself. And I always like knew when and how to pick him up. So, but I'd win if I would sometimes win by nose, but I'd win.
Jackie Liz Morris joining me on Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So Liz, you're riding in Indiana. Would you go back up to Hawthorne?
No, I ended up actually deciding I was going to retire after riding in Indiana and start being an agent.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What led to that decision?
Just making weight. It just got, I just got to a point where I'm like, this isn't healthy, you know, and I can't do this to myself. So I decided to retire and be an agent. Everyone kept asking me to be an agent anyways. They're like, Lizzie, man, why aren't you an agent? You'd be such a good agent. And like, take my book. And I'm like, I'm not ready yet, man. I'm not ready yet. So I went out on a win at Ellis Park, actually, for Gary DeLong, who I won my first race with, my fifth race, which started my bug. And then I was still named on a card on a few more horses. And I called all the trainers and said, I really would like to, you know, end on a winning note for someone from Chicago. And that's what I did.
Good way to go out.
Yeah, it was a good way to
go out. Good way to go out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you this. After you retired, did you go eat a nice big dinner?
Hell yeah. And I kept eating nice big dinners. And I blew up like a freaking balloon.
No, you did not.
I did for a while, man. And then I had to get back down again. It took my body a while to adjust.
Honestly, the same thing happened to me.
Yeah, I like blew up like a balloon. And my butt just got... And I wasn't even really eating like that bad of food. You know, it's just like my body just didn't know how to take it all on, you know?
Your body... Well, it thinks that you're starving it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's as soon as you start feeding it, it just sucks it all in and it won't let it go.
Yeah. It took about a year to kind of like let it regulate. Yeah.
Same here. I was up to like 135, 140.
You're so tiny.
Well, now.
And you're naturally tiny, though.
Like you said, it finally went, I got it off again.
Yeah.
But your body's just not used to it.
Yeah.
And so, but it had to, I'm sure you felt a lot better finally being able to eat again.
Yeah, no, it was nice. It was nice. But at the time, I was my boyfriend of 8 years. Like, he was a jockey, so I felt bad eating in front of him because he had to watch his weight. Yeah.
I remember my one friend, Sarah, I used to ride with her, and she's like 4'8" or something. Never had to worry about her weight. She'd bring a sandwich into the jock's room. I'm like, take it away.
I know.
Because, so as wrong. You know, with your boyfriend, it's you feel bad eating.
Yeah.
Because you know what it's like.
Yeah.
And what the struggle is real.
Yeah,
and
it is.
So. But obviously,
especially in the cold when your body is so hungry.
Well, it's trying to provide that warmth and eat and you just can't. And it's not fun.
No, it's
that
not.
That is one thing I don't miss.
Yeah, me neither. I don't even own a scale, nor they're like, hey, Liz, how much you weigh? I'm like, I don't know. And I don't care. As long as my clothes fit. That's all I know. I'm fine then.
Same here. We don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah.
So did you start off right away taking someone's book?
I actually was going to start hustling book at Indiana. So I finished the Ellis Park meet off ponying horses in the post parade for my friend Kirsten, who needed some help ponying, Kirsten Mojica, because she had all this business and didn't have enough help. And I was like, I'll do it. I don't care. I have nothing to do. Why not? I'm like, it's kind of different perspective. And I'm like, man, this rider is really that scared. Jeez, oh, Pete. You know what I mean? You really see like the way they talk in the post parade. I'm like, whoa, this is different. So then I started hustling book in Indiana. I had Inocencio Diego's book, which was my boyfriend, which was kind of weird. And then yeah. I had, yeah, that, great though. You know, we got along great. We never argued. We never fought. Like good. we were one of those weird couples that could hang out with each other all the time and not get tired of each other. That's probably why we lasted for 8 years. But, and then I took Julio Felix. So Julio Felix. Yeah.
How was that transition? Did you find hustling all this business and then did you find that you missed it at all?
It was weird watching races from like, now I understand where trainers and owners, what they see versus what it felt. But the cool thing is I had an advantage to be able to explain to a trainer or understand what my jockey was coming from and be able to translate that to the trainer and the owner from a perspective that they don't know anything about really, you know? So that was kind of cool. I missed riding the horses that I knew that I think I could have won on if I was on it. Mm-hmm. That I would see like, why did he do that, man? I know that horse, like, you know, but, that I missed, but then that eventually went away, you know? And now I just don't feel that really anymore.
And now you enjoy what you do.
I do. I enjoy like talking to like my jock Sean, because Sean, and when we have a conversation, he's been riding so long and he respects me the fact that I rode that, like, I can understand where he's coming from. My jockey Jack, where he's still, you know, he's young, he's 21, he hasn't been riding that long. So when I have a conversation with him, it's a different kind of conversation, you know? So, yeah.
And do you find that you mentioned all of the prep work you did when you rode and you knew pedigrees and you knew mm-hmm. how to handicap a race and how the pace was going to set up? I assume that has to be very advantageous for you now as an agent.
It is. It is. But you also have to have the jockey that understands that too, that you're representing. And like, you have to be careful because you don't want to tell them how to ride. Now, I've had bugs in the past, and the two bugs that I've had have been lean apprentices. And it was my job to teach them that, you know, but Jack's not a bug and nor is Sean, but Sean and me, we can talk about a race where Jack's still kind of learning and kind of like learning. He's a younger generation of riders. So like that respect of the fact that, hey, Liz rode, he's never done his homework on me. He doesn't know what I've done. You know what I mean? And I'm not the kind of person that's going to brag or, you know what I mean? Like, so I just kind of let him figure it out on his own. And then I ask him questions, you know,
tell him to listen to this show.
No.
But, so do you, since you rode and you know, obviously the dangers of riding, are you conscious of that as well, as far as like making sure you're putting your jocks on safe horses?
I try to. I always tell my riders, if there's something you don't want to ride, just let me know. Like, don't worry about it. Like, I won't let you ride that horseback. Like, I have your back. Always will.
That's great. That's wonderful to hear because you understand. Did you have any injuries when you rode?
I broke my collarbone. I got very lucky for the kind of horses I was riding. I broke my collarbone. And then what else happened? I've had a big hematoma on my leg from hitting the rail on a horse at their tack broke in the morning at Indiana. The back of my leg, I had three layers of skin ripped off by a horseshoe and my butt exposed. I was so embarrassed because at the time I didn't know it. And like Andy Hansen was a trainer at the time. And I'm like, bring that horse back. And they went to give me a leg up and he's kind of like looking the opposite way. And I'm like, why is he looking like that? I didn't know because my butt was hanging out. That's why. And then I get back to the barn and it was for Charlie Bettis and his wife, Janelle Bettis, which is hilarious. They're Cajun. And she's like, oh, hell, Liz, your butt's hanging out. And so she wrapped me up in a hole. She wrapped me up in a saddle towel. Yeah. And then I had a ride that day at Arlington. I had to ride the stake. And I was like, I worked too hard to get this mount, man. I'm riding. Randy Romero was my agent, so I went to the jock's room and I sat in the jacuzzi with Epsom salt, and then he brought in his dialysis spray where they, because of they, how much they inject in and poke them and stuff, to numb my leg. And they're spraying this on, I'm wrapping it up, and I rode the stake. I ran fourth, but...
Not bad.
Yeah. And I was a bug, so of course I'm not going to like miss an opportunity to ride a stake at Arlington Park,
well,
you know?
Because when you're a bug, you don't usually get opportunities, you don't get the weight off.
Exactly.
And a stake, so I'm sure that... Yeah. No way you were going to miss that.
Yep. No,
but that's amazing. But it does sound like you're fairly lucky.
No, I'm very, very lucky.
With then, injuries.
Yes.
Have you had any agent, any jockeys that you represented suffered through any bad
injuries?
No,
man, I must be a good agent.
That's what it is.
Or I'm just lucky. Or I pick lucky riders. But the only rider that's ever gotten hurt on my clock was Julio had a little minor something where he clipped hills in a race on the grass. He clipped hills and he went down on the Arlington Poly track and he didn't break anything. He actually, his collarbone was not dislocated. It was pushed in, and they never seen an injury like that before, because that poly track, if you land it, you just stick. It's awful. And so they had to figure out a device to pull out his collarbone from, it was like just, it was,
doesn't sound pleasant.
Yeah, no, it wasn't pleasant at all. And but no, he healed real quickly, like within 3 weeks, so he was good.
We only have like 2 minutes left.
Oh, okay, cool.
Liz, but tell me, you're now in Kentucky.
Yes.
Again, representing yes. Jack Gilligan and Jean Bridgemahan, mm-hmm. and you guys are riding at Churchill. So yes. What is the plan for you guys?
We are fairgrounds bound, so Louisiana. I'm trying to build Jack's business. I love him. He's my little progeny. He's my upcoming little rider. I think he's got a lot of talent. And then I've got Sean, and Sean's already got some business in Louisiana, so it just makes sense. He rides a lot for Asmussen and Brad Cox and those guys, and trying to build more business for him other than those two trainers, and that's the plan.
Are you looking forward to just the change of scenery? Do you like traveling a lot? Do you like moving, or is there something you're really not too crazy about?
I like change, but... I've been dating someone for 8 months, so it's going to be interesting to see the fact that, like, you know, being away from him is going to be kind of, like, interesting.
Long distance.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
You guys will come back.
Yeah, no, I know. So he says, it's not forever. Like, I'm glad you're more supportive than I am.
It's important.
Yeah,
that's
it is.
Good. Yeah. That's good. And Jack and Sean, how did you go about getting these guys?
I got out of the game for about a year and used my degree and did some conservation work with dolphins, manatees, birds of prey, primates from all over the world. Did that in Florida. And then I came back and I went to the sales, and I was like, I had a client that was letting me, buy some horses from at the sale. And I was introduced to somebody that said, Lizzie, you need to take this Jack Killigan's book. So that's how I ended up taking Jack. And then just Sean saw how hard I worked and how quickly I was manifesting wins for Jack that he asked me to take his book.
Sounds great, Liz. We are wishing you all of the best.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website, horseracingradio.net. So Liz Morris joined us this evening by request from you, our listeners. If you have someone in mind you would like to hear on Jock Talk, send me a message on Twitter, @JockeyKMac. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.